Hi, good evening. Welcome, everybody. Yaakov, good to see you. You'll have to forgive me. I am not tech savvy, so I can't unmute you and hear your questions.
You want me to unmute everyone at the end?
Yeah, how do we do that? One second, we'll
work on that. Let's see one more thing. If you want, let me see. If you click that little button there.
Yeah.
No, one second. Participants, if you click that little, no. You could see right there, allow participants. So
okay.
I'll leave this open.
So
when you're done, click the three dots and then click allow participants to unmute themselves. Okay? So click the three dots. If you are, you want me just to, I'll do
yeah,
it now.
Let's allow.
Okay. Right now, everyone's muted.
All right. Everyone can unmute themselves. You're on your honor not to be disruptive. Anyway. So thank you for coming. I really want to give a shout out to my old friend Yaakov Deos tuning in from Israel. That's really, really special. It's very heartwarming. What time is it now? Like 3 a.m. Wow. Anyways, so we're going to begin this series about Guf and Neshama. not all of you have the sources in front of you. There is a sign-up sheet if you want to get the sources that we will be mentioning in advance. also, I have a website, evanshasia.com, where you will find this shiurim archived, and I believe the White Shul will have it archived also. Okay, without further ado, the series is going to explore, the body versus the soul, what they are onto their own and their interface, and their interfaces on many different levels, not just how their life force is hooked up, but in what way the neshama could inhabit the mind, in what way the neshama, would inhabit the emotions, in what way the neshama would inhabit our actions. All right, so the starting point, which is the focus for tonight's discussion, is to really zero in on the big problem, for lack of a better word, the big dilemma that is the human condition. All right, the human being, the Adam, is the one creature that HaKadosh Baruch Hu made that is made up of incongruent parts. Like there might be other things made up of parts, like animals that have separate organs. There are things that aren't made up of parts, like angels that are a pure spiritual essence. They don't have, they're not physically divisible into organs. All right, but the Adam is different. That the Adam has a guf, where all the organs of the body, like the organs of an animal body, they're all from the same realm. Right, and they all work by the same laws of biochemistry, but you have a neshama that comes from heaven, right? Where these are two incongruent pieces to the puzzle, that makes up the human being, and we will further discuss since man is made up of, these pieces of the puzzle. So am I my neshama? Am I my guf? Am I something that emerges when these two entities come together? But the point I want to focus on for tonight, which is the opening, the basis for this whole series, is to fully understand how the neshama and guf are very different from each other, totally on paper, unrelated to each other, and don't need each other, really, really. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu nonetheless forced these two things together. Now you find that when HaKadosh Baruch Hu created anything else during Maaseh Bereishit, just says, Vayom Kim Yehi, and the thing just emerges. Right? The Of Ya'ofef, let the birds fly, that Chazal say, that also refers to the creation of angels. Boom. Hashem says this thing emerges. Totse aretz nefesh chaya, right? Out come animals and they come out fully animate, right? Fully alive. Right? So angels, from the moment that Hashem willed them into existence, they come into being, right? And the same thing, all the other life forms, they just emerge, you know, and it seems to be like one thing. Now, it's also an interesting thing to note is that they also come out with their mate, right? Whenever the animals came out, they came out, you know, Zohar and Nekeva, they came out together. So now, something very interesting, and we're going to discuss this later in the series, the Adam is different from all other creatures in two things. And we're going to show that these two things that he's different in are actually parallel to each other. First of all, he was created in separate parts. First, the Guf, Nairi Bosham forms it, you know, Vayitzar, HaKadosh Baruch Hu formed, the Afar, Min Adama, and then separately, Vayipach Ba'apav Nishmas Chayim Vayadam L'Nefesh Chayad, the Baruch Hu blew into him this thing called the Neshama. So the Adam was created in parts. No other creature was created that way. They emerged from the Adama, fully formed, fully animate. But also, all the creatures, from the moment they were created, it was Zugoso Imo. His mate was with him. Every other life form. The Adam wasn't that way. Adam lo matza ezer kenegdo. Right? And subsequently, the Ribbono Shel Olam says, okay, we got to make him a mate. So it's very interesting. Think about this. Right? The Adam is different than any other creature that he was created in parts, both in the micro, right? The Adam himself, Guf and Neshama separately, and Ish v'Ishto, also created separately. Adam did not emerge into being together with Chava. She was created afterwards. Now we are going to show that the complexity of man-woman relationships will actually run parallel to the complexity of the Guf and Neshama relationships. And it is in these two ways that the Adam is different from anything that the Ribbono Shel Olam created body and soul separately, and him and his mate were also created separately. Right? And further in the series, we'll show how these two differences are actually parallel to each other. But for tonight's discussion, does an Adam need a neshama to be alive? Right? So all the other creatures we said, when they came out of the Adama, they were fully animate. They didn't have to be after the body emerged to be animated. They came out alive. Whereas we find the Adam came out the Guf and then Vayipach Ba'ap of Nishmas Chaim. So now this is a machlokes Rishonim, between the Ramban on the one hand and the Ibn Ezra on the other. I am not sure 100% where the Rambam holds on this, right? Whether the neshama was even necessary to bring the Adam to life. Right? But even if it was, we're going to explain, it's still different than your regular life force, as we will explain. But the Ramban is very, very assertive. He says this twice. He says this by the first account of the creation of Adam. He says it in very short form, right? That the ki yitziras Adam baruchu hu hanefesh asher bedam. Man's life force that is carried by the blood and the circulatory system, that came out of the earth. That's biochemical, like how his whole biochemistry came out of the ground. Right? Right? It's no different than the animals, right? That, its life force came out of the ground. That initially, Totzart's Nefesh Chayav, initially Hashem created the biochemical concept of life. And then Vakach Barlem Gufos, right? Then he created bodies for the life force he created. Gufi Abem, Gufi Chaya. Vakach Gufa Adam. Venasa Bo Nefesh Hazu. When Adam was created, he gave him this biochemical life, straight from the ground, just like where the body came from. And then afterwards, it's a whole separate thing. The Nefesh El Yona, the heavenly Neshama, that came afterwards, after the Adam was fully animate, no less animate, no less alive than any other animal. So now he doubles down on this in the second account of the creation of Adam, in Shani, right, where it's more detailed over there. So over there, he brings the Ibn Ezra that says that the nefesh that came from heaven, so Ibn Ezra actually in Shmos, Chaf Gimel Chaf Hei, right, that the nefesh from heaven animated the Adam. He takes the biblical narrative literally as if Adam was a clump of clay until the neshama was blown in. And he takes issue with that. And he says this is not the case. Right, but rather the Adam's life force, right, is something that's natural. Right, there's a natural life that comes together with the body, no different than the life force of all the animals, right. And then, then blowing in the Reipach Bap of Nishmas Chaim is to give him a higher level of life. Right, and he says that's the pshat in Unklus. Vayadam le nefesh chaya. What does Unklus say? Rucha memalala, a speaking spirit. I mean, nefesh chaya doesn't mean that it made Adam alive. Adam was alive already. Right? The nefesh chaya gave him a certain type of intelligence from which comes speech, and we have to talk about that because animals communicate. Right, so we have to understand what's special about Dibur, that it's related to his heavenly soul. All right, the animals have their mating calls and can warn each other from danger, and we will yet talk about this. So he brings the famous Gemara in Sanhedrin, that Rava Bora Gavra, right, using the Sefer Yetzirah, Rava, created a golem, what we call the golem, in the words of the Gemara, it's called Gavra. He made a man with the Sefer Yetzirah. He made an animate creature, Shadre the Kameder of Zera. He sent him to Rav Zera, and Rav Zera tried to talk to this thing, didn't realize that it was an artificial creature, right? So Lo Ishtaye, the creature didn't talk back. Omar de Minche Vraya Tuv LaAfrach. Right? So he said, this was created by the Chevraya from the Talmidei Chachamim. Go back to dirt, which the Rambam brings, right? You see, you could be animate. And that golem that Rava made is akin to what Adam was before the Neshama was blown in. Fully animate, intelligent also. This thing, this creature, was able to follow orders. Right, Rava sent it to Rav Zera. He was able to follow directions and do his task. He says, that's like Adam before the Neshama. And Rav Zera figures out that this thing is not of woman born because it can't speak. Because that comes from the Neshama. But it was fully alive and intelligent also. Right? And that's, he says, that's what forced Uncle say, Ruah, that Nefesh Chaya means Ruach Memala, because you could be alive without that. Your neshama is not your biochemical life. It's something that comes from elsewhere. And he brings a few other riyas that the Gemara says, rather a Medrash. B'shar Shalom Yoshein, Haguf Omer L'Neshama, V'Neshama Omeris L'Nefesh, V'Nefesh Omeris L'Malach. Right, Yorak Shvi Mashmo Shehem Shtayin. You have the neshama talking to the nefesh, that ultimately talks to a malach. When a person's asleep, that's how you could have experiences, that you could have encounters with spiritual entities. But it goes through a few steps. There's something called the neshama talking to the nefesh that talks to the malach. Says that shows that there's two different things. There's your biochemical life force. Now, it's bonded to something else that's a nefesh from Shemayim, which could communicate with Malachim, etc. So the Ramban is very, very adamant, right, that you don't need a neshama to be alive. That's not why we have a neshama. Right? We're perfectly alive and even intelligent without a neshama. There is some lashonos in Chazal that would seem that this is the case, exactly like the Ramban says. There are neshamas in Chazal that talk about, that the Adam was created, in steps, in course of the hours of Friday, right? So there's one lashon in Chazal that, b'shishi aso golem, b'shvi nafach bo neshama. Right? That's one lashon in Chazal. That's a Medrash Rabban Vayikra. So if you go, that Medrash sounds like the Ibn Ezra, But you have the Psitta Rabbosi in two places, right? You know, where it says that, you know, if we'll start in what Parsha Memvav, that it says, going through the, that the, progression of how Hashem made him in course of Friday, you know, on the sixth day of creation. First hour, Adam Rishon was, you know, contemplated. On the second hour, he took counsel with the Malachi Ashoris regarding this Adam project for reasons that we'll discuss later in the series. Why did the Ribosh Hashem be Nimlach by Malachi Ashoris? What was the purpose in that? Shlishis Bayom Tzavar Afro, on the third hour, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gathered the earth that Adam was clumped together from. Barvius Giblo, on the fourth hour, he, you know, he needed it, you know. B'chamishis Ritmo Tziro, K'mo Shodam Chai, Ayd Atzmo, Shem Asidi, B'setru Kamti, B'dachtius Eretz, right? So now on the fifth hour, he actually now did the fine formation, that the Adam looked like any human being at that point. He was perfectly fined and refined. So what does it say afterwards? Right? Shvius, right? Vahaya, so now it says, Shishis Hemido al Raglov. In the sixth hour, Adam stood up on his feet. He was, you know, standing on his own 2 feet. Mm-hmm. And at that time, this is before the Chet. So Adam was as big from earth all the way up to the sky. Right? Shvius Nafach bo neshama. And in the seventh hour is when he got his neshama. So it's a mefurash medrash, like the Ramban, which I will demonstrate has become the mainstream opinion. Right? Adam was fully alive, right, standing on his own 2 feet before he got a neshama inside of him. Right? So this, so there's another psikta, Parsha Chof Gimel, that even says he was quite intelligent before he got his neshama also. It says like this, Shimon ben Lakish, Shem Lozo ben Azariah, B'shor Shibar HaKadoshu Asa Adam Rishon, Golem Bro'o. He made him a golem, right? He was, still without a neshama. V'yamutu b'sofam v'ad sofo, and he was so big, he was from one end of the earth to the other. V'HaKadoshu Ma'avil fun of Dor, Dor, V'tzadikav, Dor, Dor, V'rashav, Dor, Dor, Vidorshav, Dor, Dor, Manhigav. And in that state, Hashem showed Adam all the generations that are going to be born. Vamarlo Golem, Maro Enechan. Hashem asked him, Golem, what did you see with your eyes? Right? Right? So it says, it's not brought down in the part that I, but it's a pasuk, Gomi Ro'u Enecha. Right? Even my unrefined state, I saw, everything that you wanted to show me. So again, even the state of Adam Rishon being a golem before his neshama entered him, he was fully alive and even intelligent, which, begs the question, therefore, what do we need a neshama for? Right? That, Adam is biochemically alive, no different than any other behema chaya v'of. So you might say, the biochemical life gives intelligence. Well, this still has to be qualified. Animals are not stupid. Right? You have a few psukim in Mishle, Perek Lamed. Abrim Taniyotz, Vehema Chachomim Mechukamim. There are four small creatures, and they are very, very wise. And Kohel, speaks about the Nemolim, Amlo, Az, Yachidu, Bakaitz, Lachmam, the ants, right? They are, you would think they're not very smart, but they prepare food during the summer for the winter period. Shvarim, Amlo, Otzim, Esumasel, Betam, the rabbits, they're not very strong, but they still manage to create burrows where they live in rocks. Right, right. There is no king that unites and conducts the affair of the locusts, but they all travel together in a formation that makes them hard to be hunted. Right, they protect each other. And the spider, it could climb and it could weave webs. So, So, and also you have the famous Gemara in Eruvin, Daf Kuf Amud Beis, that if Torah would have not been given, we could have learned the Torah from the animals. We would have learned, you know, Gezel from the Namala. We have learned Sneus from the Chasula. Right? And the Gemara over there gives a whole bunch of examples how we could have learned the Torah from the wisdom of the animals. Right? Gemara in Baba Kama, Daf Nun Vav. Right, Gemara Konis, every yeshiva bachar knows, hinicha b'chama, if you put an animal in the sun, you're a shomer, right? So you're a shepherd, and you think you have the animal fenced in, but you are hinicha b'chama, you leave her fenced in the sun, and she breaks out, you're chayiv, because the Gemara explains, kol titzki, when she's in the sun, she's uncomfortable, she thinks of devious plans of how to escape. Right, as the Lashon of Gemara, and another Gemara in Baba Kama, on Daf Lamed Hey, the Gemara talks about the shor pikeach that knows to medicate itself if it had a burn, so it'll rub itself on ashes, was a case in point. And the Gemara asks, are animals really that intelligent? The Gemara says, yeah, there was a shor that Rav Papa had that had a toothache, right? And the people couldn't figure out what was bothered, so she went and she self-medicated. Right, she broke into his liquor cabinet and she got herself stone drunk, to kill the pain. Right? the Gemara says, as Uriah, case in point, animals are intelligent. Right? It's not true to say that these creatures are like as the biochemical life force, and biochemistry doesn't give intelligence. It does. Right? Which means, so we go back to Chazal, talk about Sichas Ofos. Right? The birds communicate, and Chazal knew. Shlomo Melech knew, listen and understand their language. They have some form of communication also, right? So we have to understand, I'm bringing all this up to understand that, if you think that you need a neshama to be alive, you think you need a neshama to be intelligent, you need a neshama to do pragmatic communication, the animals have all that with their biochemical life force. It means we have a neshama for an entirely different purpose, above just being alive and going about our earthly affairs. And it's a frightening thought. It means that, we are not tapping in to the awesome power of the neshama. A friend of mine, Akiva Eisenberg, I have no idea where he is in the world. We taught together at Eisha Torah years ago. He said he's about to give a shmooze. Do I want to hear what he's going to say? I said, yeah, absolutely. He says, he read in a scientific article about a bug, not very small. It is so small, it doesn't even have what could be called biologically a brain. Right? It just has two thick ganglions, two thick, webs of nerves. Right? It's too small to have a brain in any conventional sense. But nonetheless, this bug could seek nutrition, right? Build shelter, right, and avoid danger, right? So it's a pachad. That's a whole secular life. What do we spend our lives running around, doing? Just call my adam lepiu. Right? The pasuk says, working hard just to put bread on the table, have a house to live in, avoid danger. You don't even need a brain for that, right? Kal v'chomer, kal v'chomer and neshama, from the highest place in heaven. Right, so we have to understand for what purpose do we have a neshama? If you could be alive without it, you could be intelligent without it. Right? So before we get any further, I want to address something, an idea that's been popularized by Hasidus, right? But the idea is in Kabbalah, it's in the Sforim. And I have to address this issue so there shouldn't be a misunderstanding, right? We know that va'ata mechaya es kulam, right? There is some dvar Hashem in everything that is its life force that holds it in existence, right? And in Hasidus they popularize that there's nitzotzes, right? There's like these heavenly sparks. Of course, there are two different types that are beyond the scope of tonight's discussion. There's the sparks that keep in existence as it is, and then there's as it fallen sparks, which is lost potential that needs to be raised, and maybe we'll talk about that later because that's what the Adam does, right? But this is not so, and some Sforim will give a mashal for this and call it guf and neshama. But you have to realize that they're borrowing the terms very, very loosely to give us a model that there's something spiritual, you know, holding the physical in existence. But let's not make a mistake. There is a perfect congruence between that spark and the physical entity that it holds in existence. Right? You know, it is the energy. If we look at reality as a totem pole, that energy goes down from higher level to lower level, to level beneath that, to level, ultimately down to Gashmias. It becomes more and more Megusham as the energy goes down. So, of course, the level right above Gashmias is perfectly congruent to the thing that it's holding in existence. It is the thing itself, just on a more refined level, which is connected to the thing itself. Just on a more refined level, which is connected to the thing itself. So it's something which has its heavenly root, that's nishtalsha lamata, and ultimately becomes gashmis. So when we're talking about the heavenly spark in it, we're not talking about a separate entity. We're talking about the thing itself. And this is what I heard from my Rebbe, Moshe Shapira. What's an object in Lashon HaKodesh? Davar. Why do you? Dvorim, right? Stuff, right? It also means words. Why do we say that? Because bidvar Hashem shamayim nasu, you know, it's the word for an object because everything exists mikoach dvar Hashem. You know, everything is, you know, exists, you know, bidvar Hashem. That's how we call something a davar. We call it a chefetz because it exists by divine will. So that divinity that keeps it in existence, it's called in the Svarim, in a very borrowed sense, it's neshama, but it's not doma to what we're describing over here. The neshama is not the spiritual root of the body. It's a totally different entity that was forcefully bound with the body. It's not the body itself on a higher level. That's the spark in all other entities. It's the thing itself. And that's what Chassidus says, focus on the spark, because that's the real thing. Don't look at what it looks like or what it tastes like, because the real thing, the dover, is the Dvar Hashem, right? Don't focus on the lechem, focus on the motza pi Hashem, right? But that's the thing itself. The neshama that we're talking is not our bodies. It's a different entity. It's not the spiritual root of the body, right? It's something totally else that was forcibly compounded with the body. And that is the great dilemma of the human condition that we're trying to understand. And that's why, you know, the purpose of tonight's session is to focus on the omek of the dilemma, that the body does not need the neshama to be alive. Right? Yeah, it is something else that was forcibly grafted to the body for a purpose that we need to understand, because you could be alive, you could be intelligent without it. Yes, go ahead.
The chai and the daber, right?
Right.
So we're saying that the daber is just the chai plus a neshama.
That's right. That's correct. That's what the Ramban says. And, you know, so now it's important to note that when we say that the Ibn Ezra, because he wants to take the psukim more literally, that the neshama brought the body to life, right? So even like the Ibn Ezra, and I want to reserve judgment exactly how the Rambam holds this, because I can think of a few different Rambams in a few different directions about this. But it doesn't take away from the fact, so it's a chiddush. It's a chiddush that the Ribbono Shel Olam sent a heavenly entity to turn the body on, because he didn't have to do that, because we see he didn't have to do that by the chayosin office. So the dilemma of the human condition, why does a man have a neshama from Vayipach Ba'apav, why is that necessary, still remains. It just would come out, according to the Ibn Ezra, that there are certain aspects of your neshama that came from heaven that you can destroy, right? Because it becomes one with the body. So if you take down your body in a spiritual sense, you will take down a certain part of that soul, right? But it still doesn't change the fact that it is, you know, so even according to Ibn Ezra, we will show that the later Achronim, the Mekubalim, go with the Ramban on this, but it's still, the question remains, why did Ribbono Shel Olam see fit to animate the body with something that came from heaven when life force and natural intelligence comes packaged, you know, comes all together out of the earth, together with with all the other aspects of the biochemistry?
Just the final thing, all of this is only on strictly speaking about how it was of the Rishon.
That's right. The Ibn Ezra is saying this about Adam Rishon. That's right.
Did it stop first at a goyim and then become like the Rabban? The Ibn Ezra said it was a one shot.
So he won't go like those midrashim that hand me to al raglav. He'll go like the other medrash. It just says golem and then vayipach ba'apav. And golem who learned that he was lying flat, you know, inanimate. Right, but like you said, this was just, you know, the one-time deal. Ever since then, you know, there's the biochemistry of conception, and then there's the neshama. But the interactions already start at the time of conception, as we're going to learn. But the point that we want to get across over here is that the neshama that we're talking about is a totally different creature than the body, forcibly hooked up with the body. Okay, so now this is easier to hear like the Ramban, but it's also very possible to hear like the Ibn Ezra also. Once you realize that the neshama and the body are two different entities that are grafted together, and we're going to discuss the nature of this grafting and in what way the neshama is bound up with the guf, but you can automatically understand something very interesting. That when Chazal said, Rishoyim b'chayim kruyim mesim, tzadikim b'misosam kruyim chayim, that's not drush. That's not, you know, hyperbole or whatever you want to call it, you know, metaphor. That's literal. It is entirely possible, and I'm going to show it to you in the Rambam, it is entirely possible to be biochemically alive but spiritually dead. You destroyed the link between your body and neshama, and we're going to learn, this has to be explained better, more al pi Kabbalah, it is entirely possible to be biologically dead, but your neshama still has a kesher with the guf that is awaiting resurrection in the kever, because your neshama is not your biological life force. So now I gave you, in the source sheet, we have two Rambams that say this pretty loud and clear, that he takes that Gemara of Rishoyim B'chayim Kuriyim Mason, Tzadikim B'misasam Kuriyim Chayim, quite literally. It's a Gemara in Brachas Daf Yud Ches Amud Beis. So in the Rambam, you have a page over here with sources from the Rambam. In Mesechet Shana, in his Hakdama Dechelek, so the Rambam says, regarding Tchias HaMason, right? Tchias Mason only for tzaddikim, right? And that's why, in a certain way, there's more universal good on a rainy day because it's for tzaddikim and rishoyim than tchias Mason, which is only for tzaddikim. So he says like this: Ve'ech yichayu arishoyim ve'hem mason afilu bechayehem. V'chein omru, Rishoyim afil b'chayim kruim mesim, tzadikim afil b'misosam kruim chayim. Now the Rambam didn't have to throw it in. This is the Rambam explaining the idea of tchias mesim. Rambam throws in, and I'll tell you why a Russia doesn't have tchias mesim, because he's already spiritually dead now. So tchias mesim, everyone will admit, is a spiritual event that, you know, it is spurned by the spiritual that, you know, creates that amazing event. Right, the miraculous return of the neshama to the body is what reanimates the body. This man already in his lifetime is Kori Mesa, Zikr Misal Kurim Chayim. So now with this in mind, we have another Rambam in Hilchos Tshuva that is now decoded. So the Rambam says over there, Odom Shavanosav Rubim Al Sukasav Miyad Hu Mes Berisho. Right, this is on the din on Rosh Hashanah. If a person is more bad than he is good, he immediately dies in his wickedness. The word berisho is seemingly an extra word. So now if you take a look towards the bottom paragraph in square brackets, there's a hasaga from the Ravid on this. And Rabbi, Adam Shalabrum, Al-Sab, Miyadu, Meis Berisho, Omar Avram, Lo Kamo Shu Sover. No, it can't be like the Rambam says. Right, Kishom Roshon Nechtam La'alta Misa, when Chazal said on Rosh Hashanah, said Nechtam La'alta Misa, that the Rambam is taking this so literally. The Rambam is talking about the dinner on Rosh Hashanah. That Rosh Hashanah Nechtam La'alta Misa, Shemiya Mesim, Ve'eno Kein. We see it's not the case. Kesh Roshoim Chaim Harbe. We see a lot of Roshoim are walking the earth and live long lives, you know, and they went through the dinner of Rosh Hashanah. Right. So rather, so the Ravid says, "Miyadu meis" means that the nigzar misa, that his life gets shortened. his life gets shortened. I would like to posit that the pshat in the Rambam is miarumes berisho. He is spiritually dead. Immediately on the din of Rosh Hashanah, and that's why he's meduik mes, not miarumes, miarumes berisho. Right? He is the from amongst the Rishoyim, he gets audited and he gets a din of Rishoyim, Bechayehem, Kriyim Mesim. So even though if he's still alive biologically, he is spiritually dead. The Rambam understands this quite literally. A person could be biologically alive, spiritually dead, and biologically dead, but spiritually alive. And we will explain that later in the series. And like the Ramban, this is easy to understand because your life force and your neshama had nothing to do with each other. They were forcibly grafted together. So now you might ask, so the spiritually dead, you know, what is their function in the world? What do the spiritually dead do? So there's another Rambam that I brought for you over here. It's a very long Rambam, so I'll just say it over outside. And the Rambam, this is in his Hakdama to the Pirush HaMishnayos, and Perek, you know, the Hakdama is Roim. And he is going through the Chalakim of Torah Shebaal Peh. And he's working his way through the generations, gets to the Mishnah, and then he describes the Gemara, and he describes the parts of the Gemara. And he says, Gemara is something called Agadata. And he says, don't think that Agadata is like just stories. It's really deep stuff in metaphors. And he says, I'm going to give you one example. I'm going to teach you one example. From that, it'll be an example, show you how deep Agadata is. What does it mean? What does that Agadata mean? So says the Rambam like this. You have to ask a question. You know, if man was created, you know, to pursue wisdom, and to only do lofty things, because otherwise he's stama behema, and that's kind of a hint to what we have in the Shema for, as we'll discuss, right? So, but there are billions and billions of people in the world, says the Rambam, who aren't doing any of this. They're wasting their lives, just trying to make money, right? Chasing their tivus. Why does God tolerate their existence? Right? So the Rambam says two answers, right? And he says, the first answer is what's no good, this agada. He says like this, that what builds economies is the mad drive for excess. If people would only be satisfied with what they ought to be satisfied with, there wouldn't be so many clothes produced, not so many shoes made, and not so many different brands, and it would never be end of the season, you know, excess sales, you know, to get rid of the merchandise that hasn't moved. If people would only be living very frugally to the extent of the only thing that they need. But what that does is it creates excess, right? And the competition causes roads to be paved and buildings to be built. You know, makes life, you know, in the mad rat race, bishogeg, you know, there's a little bit of excess and a lot of added convenience, making it easier for those people who are, yeah, spending their lives pursuing wisdom and doing good deeds. Because he says, imagine if the Adam HaSholem, the complete person who's only engaged in the pursuit of wisdom, right, and doing good deeds, also had to make his own clothes and sew his own shoes, right? Or to be so little of it around that it would cost a lot of money, so he'd have to make the money. He wouldn't have time to pursue wisdom. He wouldn't have time, right, to do good deeds. So Reb Shem tolerates, he says, billions and billions of people just in a mad rat race that's creating excess so as those resources, at the end of those end of the season sales, go to the Adam HaSholem, the guy who's learning and only working Kedei HaTzorech, and it makes his lifelong pursuit of the pursuit of wisdom possible. Wouldn't be possible, and that's what it means. Ein lo la'kodesh baruch hu ba'olamo el da'at amish ha'halacha bilvad. Right? Reb Shem tolerates the existence of billions of people because of the geo-economical system that it creates for the purpose of whatever filters down to the da'at amish ha'halacha. That's its tachlis. And Reb Shem will tolerate billions of people just for the sake of the few resources that, you know, filter down to the Adam HaSholem. Right? That's his first teretz. The second teretz is not any more encouraging. You know, it doesn't have to do with Da'at HaSholem. He says that it is well known that the animal population, if you leave buildings abandoned, you leave them open space, the animal population rapidly expands and it becomes very dangerous. The Ribono Shel Olam says when he's going to give us the land of Israel, Ma'at ma'ad argashenu mipanecha pen tir be'alecha chaya sasodeh. I'm not going to get rid of the Shiva Amin right away because, they'll leave vacant cities, the animals will move in, and then it'll be too dangerous. So you need the lions and the tigers and the bears have to eat somebody, right? And keep buffer. Right? So the Ribono Shel Olam will tolerate billions and billions of people being out there. Right? Rambam writes this, right? To keep the natural balance. But again, I guess it all gets bound to that the Odom Masholem, the few and the wise and the few and the proud, that the whole world was kedai to be created for. So in other words, it wasn't Stalin who invented the term useful idiots. It was the Rambam. Right? Instead said, billions of people. Now, we could easily say, now, even without getting too philosophical, this Hasaga of the Ravid that says if the guy is Miab Meis Barisho, how do you explain all these evil people that are still walking the world after Rosh Hashanah? So the Rambam says we do need useful idiots. So they're not really there for themselves. They're there, to service the Odom Hashem. So they, mitzad themselves, are as good as dead. They're alive, right, to support the Odom Hashem. All right. All right, if we synthesize the two Rambams together, we see that it's it's kind of just a person who's not doing anything constructive with life. He's not using his neshama. He is just chasing his vanities, right? So he's not. So this person is spiritually dead anyway. The useful idiot. So either Teretz is good enough for that Rambam Nochus Juva, but we could definitely synthesize together. The useful idiots are spiritually dead. Right? They are not using their neshama. They're certainly not. If you are just engaged in staying alive, you didn't need a neshama from heaven. All right, so, our time is short, but we brought a few midrashim that talk about how the neshama is very unhappy here. Now, there's a midrash in Koheles, right? Gama nefesh lo timale. Right, what's in that? And the soul is never satisfied. Mashal leben ironi shenosa bas melech. A simple city dweller married a princess. How? I don't know, but he did. Got an unbelievable shidduch. Whatever he brings her, says the matter, she's never happy. Mipnei shi bas melech. So also, that describes the human situation of body and soul. The bas melech is the neshama, the ironi is the guf, and they're married. And this is a hint, going back to what we said before, that the Odom is also different than all the life forms that is bas zug, did not come out together with him. And we said, and we're going to learn a Zohar together, shows that these are perfectly parallel. How man was created himself in the micro, in parts, and then in the macro, him and his zug, right, also came out in separate parts. It's perfectly parallel to the guf neshama relationship. And that's why this medrash is very deep, explaining the guf and neshama as a marriage between a simple person and a bas melech. That's the body and the soul. Kama nefesh lo timale, right? And then there's a medrash in Tehillim. You'll see on your source sheet that says that actually every day neshama zos kol shashiyol yeres mevakeshes lotzeis mina adam. Your neshama is so unhappy here; it tries to leave you every single day. By me, it happens about 4 p.m. Right? So echi omeres besocho. Right? How does the neshama stay? It mamish doesn't belong. Right? Ela kosh brochu malo kolatz kvaro menicha begufo. He also wrote says yotzer bechazareh. But kosh brochu malo kolatz kvaro forces the neshama to stay in the body. The neshama tries to escape every single day, and the Ribono Shel Olam just has to appear and stop it. Right? And then there's the famous quote from the Mesillas Yesharim, right? That how the neshama is very, bringing mentions the Medrash from Koheles and obviously has in mind this Medrash in Tehillim. He says, you have it on your source sheet. If man was created for his situation in this world, why does he have a neshama in him that is from a higher place than even where the angels come from? Again, going back to the total incongruence between the neshama that was Vayipach Ba'apav and the guf, right? So now we're out of time, right? But I also forgot a Ramchal. The Ramchal, particularly in all his books, particularly in Derech Hashem, is an excellent reference book to either get an introduction to a topic or to sum it up. And you can see he himself attests to the fact in his Hakdama, there's not a single extra word in the Derech Hashem. And you will see in the extracts from Derech Hashem that I put on your source sheet, everything that we said, he goes with the Ramban. And he says, and he explains in all these different references that I brought down for you, that man's life force, including his natural intelligence, that's all biochemical. Right, so man was created with, when his body was created, it is he was created fully alive with a certain degree of natural, we call human intelligence, like there is dog intelligence and pigeon intelligence. There is such a thing called natural human intelligence, right? The neshama is something totally different. It's not the spiritual root of the body. It is a different creature from a very high place, totally incongruent to the Adam that was forcibly bound up with him. All right. So now, this concludes, the disillusioning thought that I want to bring out tonight, which is the basis for the series. We have to understand that the guf and the neshama are totally incongruent. It is not that one is like the more inner content of the other. Two incongruent creatures forced together for reasons that we need to understand. And we need to understand what do we get from a neshama if we are already alive and intelligent with our biochemical life force, for what purpose? And also, when I make a decision, is it my neshama that decided? Is it my body that decided, right? And so the neshama, we say we have natural intelligence, right? Would the neshama for sure gives us certain thoughts. How can I tell when a thought is a biochemical brain thought or a neshama thought? When a feeling is a body feeling or a neshama feeling? This is what we will cover, Be'ezer Hashem, during this series. But of course, what's next session, this upcoming Monday, is to understand the purpose of why HaKadosh Baruch Hu did this to us and built us out of two oppositional pieces. And then we'll start discussing the details of the interactions. Thank you very much. Have a good Shabbos. I'm staying here because I have to broadcast something else, but thank you for coming, Ari. There were plenty of other people that were supposed to come tonight, but they had weddings. Well, Ari Hurt was supposed to go to Beresh's Chasana. Beresh make a Chasana tonight.
Good. You were here. That's what counts.
Yeah, I'm not saying there's a Yoni
Kana. How do you define a Gadi? How would that be?
Oh, we're going to get into that. They are something in between. In between, they don't have a full neshama. Yeah, they don't have a full neshama like we do, and that's the sort of Atem Kriyam Adam. We will get into that. That they, even Chassidei Umos HaOlam, they don't, according to the Ramchal, they don't have a full existence. They're not citizens of Olam Haba. Even with their Zoche, they come in as appendages to us.
2,800 per?
What?
2,800 per?
I'm not sure if that's this. They're talking about the same thing, but he says that Chassidei Maslom are a levush on Klal Yisrael. They don't have neshamas like we do.
And this thing that you're talking is also not yet. We're talking the nefesh akis and nefesh abahamis.
That's right. So nefesh abahamis is biochemical.
You're talking about the rishonim, the rabban. You're pre that kind of language. Are we evolving to that in the conversation?
Well, we're going to start talking about the life force as Nefesh Bahamas, and we're going to talk about the Nefesh Elokis as what came, the totally incongruent piece that was forcibly grafted.
Okay.
And we're going to start talking about where are they grafted, and is the neshama in the body equally, or, you know, most of it's not, and there was a difference between korbachet and lacharachet. How much of your neshama could actually fit in your body? We will discuss, right? You know, it's and that's what we're talking about. It could be that the aspect that's in, you know, that envelops even your actions, but the aspect that gives you Ruach HaKodesh, that aspect stays up here or above here. It's complicated. It's a complicated model, and it's also a sliding scale. The bigger you are, you could steig and start being zoche to more of your neshama being in your body. So just like you could, be on extreme that we describe, be spiritually dead, but it goes the opposite way, that you reach that they're so bonded together, that the bond between body and soul doesn't stop in death. Right? And during your life, you have a whole sliding scale of how much of your neshama you could be zoche to, how much, God forbid, you could lose.
Right. Interesting the way you said Gushim, when stuff comes down, I wonder if that's Geshem.
That's Geshem.
Geshem. That's
right.
Almost the word.
Yeah, Geshem becomes.
From the top down.
That's right.
Geshem literally means what?
Geshem means condensed. Condensation. That's what it's condensation. But I'm just saying, it's not Dome. Of course, there's Nitzotzis in this table, but those Nitzotzis are perfectly equivalent, congruent to the table. Yeah, but the neshama is not congruent to the guf. That's the point, and that's the Jason is to understand the pella that is the human being.
That balance, the tension is always there. Which
that's right. The table's not going through tension, right?
Yeah. Okay.
Right. Right. Not Amos. Okay. Shkayach Harav. Thank you for coming.
Good job.
Good job.